Radio.
A multi-ethnic church building intercultural mission in the parish. A presentation by Brenda Hubbard at Proclaim 2016. Brought to you by Cradio and XT3.
Okay, well, first off, we'll say welcome. How many different languages do we have here that you can read?
Dutch.
Italian and Spanish.
Arabic.
And the Arabic. And French,
Portuguese.
And Portuguese,
German.
And we're a very multicultural group. Okay, I'd like to start off by acknowledging the country on which we are gathered today. So before we start, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, whose footprints are deeply embedded in the earth of this country, and whose presence is with us today, as it will be into the future. I do this to acknowledge the multicultural diversity of our society, which includes the Indigenous people, as well as migrants and refugees. Okay, so I come from this, apparently I'm a Mexican because I come from south of the border. I'm right down here in Melbourne. And though it's a very small archdiocese, it's got the largest number of Catholics. It's the largest diocese in the Oceania area. Sydney could have had that mantle, but you split yourselves up into three, which I think isn't a bad idea. I think Victoria might actually be better if it was divided into four sectors coming out of Melbourne. And they complain that we've got the city, we're a city diocese, and we shouldn't have country and all that. But actually, our diocese stretches from Geelong down in the southwest and right up to Myrtleford, which is a country town up in the northeast. And so I don't think that would really be an issue. I think we'd all actually benefit from having parts of our diocese that are based in the centre, in the city, but also stretch out. And there's also parts of the metropolitan of Melbourne don't actually belong to the Melbourne diocese. They actually are in the Sale diocese. So that's just a little bit of background around the geography of the Melbourne diocese. So our Melbourne experience. So these figures are based on the 2011 census. Who here hasn't filled out their census for 2016? It'll be very interesting. In fact, it'll be very interesting when the figures come out as to how the things will go. Because did you see the religion question? That no religion was the top answer, and how likely is that going to spike? Anyway, our population compared to the Australian population, we're 4.1 million out of the 21.5 million Australians. We have 19.1% of the Australian population. The number of Catholics are over 1.1 million. So 27.1% of the Melbourne Archdiocese area are Catholic. And we're 20.6% of the Australian Catholic population. So we have quite a significant slice. As I said, we're the largest archdiocese in the Oceania area. And when we're looking at Catholics that were born overseas, and these are based on, as I say, the 2011 figures, so they may have increased a little bit. So we've got over 320,000 Catholics that are born overseas, and that's compared to the 1.2 million Australian-wide. So we have 29.1% of Catholics born overseas are in the Melbourne diocese. And 4.5% of them are born in English-speaking countries, and 24.6% are born in a non-English-speaking country, or English is the second language, or mightn't even be the language at all. And of that, of this figure, 69,000 of them have arrived since the previous census. So they're quite a significant numbers in that we should be catering for. And we're looking at where people have come from. The Italians, it comes from the Second World War, the post-World War II influx. The Philippines are a growing population, so as this population goes down, this one's going up. The Indian population is increasing. Maltese is one of those post-World War II things. Croatians are in the 50s and 60s coming here. The Vietnamese came in the 70s. You know, they just celebrated 40 years in Australia. Central and South American is another growing group. The Sri Lankans are growing, whereas the Polish is a population that's going down. And as you said in the introduction, we have about 45 migrant chaplains that cover most of those, in fact, all of those groups. They cover all of those different language groups. But I think with the Africans, the South Sudanese, I think that's actually plateaued. There was that spike over the last 15 years, and I think they're no longer a main focus for incoming. And so they're the major languages other than English. Again, we have migrant chaplains that cover most of those. And what was surprising, if you went to Bob Dixon's talk, which I think is actually on the same time at the moment, he said that this is the largest growing language group, is Arabic. And that's through your South Sudanese, but also through our Eastern churches, that there's more people coming in. And then we have about people who ask the question how proficient you are in English. And so you can sort of see the Assyrians, which are probably a relatively new population. The Vietnamese, as I said, have been here for 40 years, but they've managed to not acquire the language as expected. The Koreans are another one that tend to be able to survive without getting too proficient in English. Arabic, again, I said, is a relatively new and upcoming language group. Your Italians, you know, they're post-World War II, you know, it's 50, 60, 70 years ago, and there's still a significant number that aren't proficient in English. Chinese, Croatian, Hungarian, the Spanish. And then I thought this was interesting about the age distribution, that these newer groups have got lots of children. And then there's percentages in that are adults. And then you can sort of see the percentage where they're over 65. And again, you can see there the post-World War II migrant intakes. Okay, so building stronger parishes, and these were the indicators of a vital parish. There was a strong sense of belonging, of community, of support. People cared for each other. Help was always available when needed. There were strong bonds between people, and there was a high level of connectivity. So do think about your parish. You know, how does your parish priest work with, do they have a supportive pastoral council? Is your pastoral council supported as well? So that when you have a special activity, they've got people that they can draw on and draw in. So, you know, it's not the same old people that are getting burnt out, having to put everything on. There's a general feeling of being welcomed and accepted, and a strong sense of ownership. You know, we might be pretty good at welcoming and having a cuppa and that sort of thing, but how do we actually invite people in? How do we get them off the highways and the byways? Okay, and then there's a strong sense of ownership. And this can cut both ways, is that, you know, when you've got your people like your Italians and your Maltese who laid the concrete for your foundations of your church, they have a very, very strong sense of ownership of that church. And so when new groups come in, it's sort of like, you know, they're taking over our parish. There's Chinese, there's Vietnamese and the South Sudanese. And there's not just realisation is that we're all part of the same journey, the same migration journey to heaven sort of thing, to salvation. But the strong sense of ownership is that when you run a project that everyone, yeah, this is a great idea, you know, we're going to own this idea and we're going to move it forward. So it's more ownerships of ideas rather than the physical assets. Okay, so we're going to move on to some of the areas of building. And so it's the liturgy. So that's our central activity, I think, of a parish, is how can we encourage more multicultural participation in our liturgies? So every year I organise our annual mass at the cathedral, and all the migrant chaplains, they get their communities to come along, some in national dress, they bring flags, they bring banners. And how I don't have World War III is beyond me, but anyway, there's always a fight over the car park, and It's all the other things apart from the maths that cause me grief is, you know, who gets a carb hotspot and who doesn't, where I source barbecues for the after mass barbecue and things like that, and who didn't refill the gas bottle. But in the actual liturgy, it's very, very limited. The only places that there can be participation is, the choir. The readings can be read in different languages. The prayers of the faithful, I get a person from different communities. But it's a pretty small amount of input that's allowed. There's quite strict rules. Even things like flags can become, they can be politicised, and so we've got to be careful about introducing them and having them up on our altar. I tend to say, just bring your national colours, don't bring your flags, sort of thing. You know, the South Sudanese, they've got a complaint about, they use two different flags for Sudan and South Sudan. So how can we encourage more multiple cultural participation? You spoke about you celebrate the Chinese New Year. Do you have a point in your liturgical years that celebrate the different cultural groups in your parishes? So if you've got the Maltese, what's the saint for the Maltese community? Do you have a big celebration? There's St. Anthony's for the Italians. There's who's for the Filipinos? St. Lorenzo. And so these are opportunities for your parishes and for your migrant communities to celebrate in the midst of your parishes and to enliven, so it's not just the weekly mass, it's injected with something new as well. And I think also it's important to make these things natural for your parish. That I can remember we had in our parish, I think it was their 40th anniversary, and they made this big deal and we were going to have multicultural mass, and we did put out CDs and we did this and we had interviews and profiles and all this sort of thing. We did it once. It took too much energy, and it's like, yeah, start with something and incorporate it so it becomes part of your liturgical, it just becomes part of the natural cycle of your year. We have in our local parish, it's a predominantly Italian. The church is fairly modern, so no one likes to get married there because it's not the traditional church. But we had, we were just ticking along in our parish, and our 10:30 mass is really sad. It's getting smaller and smaller. But the Vietnamese were looking for a place, and they've come to our parish. Well, the first Christmas they did the nativity scene, and it took up half the altar. Like it started out with the star, and it came down. It was a rocky mountain, and it had this, and had that, and had goats, and it took over half the altar. Yes, it was amazing, and it just really, whoa, coming for Christmas this year, it's going to be really good. And so, yeah, they're great opportunities to inject. The other thing around the artwork we have around our churches. There's a parish in Melbourne, and it's not actually in the church. It's in their hall downstairs. But they have a ledge all the way around, and they have all these different representations of Mary, little statues of Mary, and all different nationalities. When I come into work, there's a picture. It's an Asian picture of Mary and the Christ child. If we put all those images up there, it'll actually become more natural as well. So we move on. So we talk about welcome and hospitality. So you're talking about, what you can do, real simple, have cuppas after mass. So you're not racing off. You give people that sense of, I want to stay here, I want to talk to you, here, can I get you a cuppa? It doesn't have to be, oh, ladies, you all have to bring a cake after mass on Sunday, please, because we're going to have a cuppa. You just make it a natural thing. And, one person might bring a plate one week, someone might bring something other. Oh, I'm supposed to bring a plate, I'll bring a plate. Oh, well, we don't need to bring a plate because the parish provides biscuits and cups of tea. So that's one way. So I made the point yesterday about we sit in mass and we see the same people every week, but we don't know their name. We offer each other a sign of peace. That's perhaps an opportunity to say, introduce yourselves to each other. Yeah, and so over time you will be able to offer the sign of peace and say, happy, Don Rita,
yes,
peace with you. Just another example, it's something I did a few years ago, and again it was around Migrant and Refugee Sunday. And what we did one year was we did a display. We have our church, and then we have like this meetings gathering space, and it's just this circular glass area. It's quite beautiful because our church was architecturally designed when it was originally done, very 70s, and it had everything in it has meaning, but it's very minimalist. And when you go in, the idea was that the foyer is very dark, so you come into the darkness, and then when you go into the church, it's sort of this big white area. So our front foyer is not very inviting. And so I did this display, and we set up old suitcases, and we invited a few people, 8 to 10 people, to just bring one item that they brought with them when they migrated to Australia, and just to give a little word about why they still had this so many years later, or why they brought it, why it was important to them. And that was a great way of, I got to pick up all these different names, and I got a little bit of their story. And so finding opportunities to get people to write their, to have their 1 minute testimony is another great way, I think, of evangelizing ourselves, bringing Christ to ourselves from other people. I can see we're actually just about reached time, and just quickly talk about outreach and whether your parishes have outreach of any sort. Someone once told me it's no use being a parish, no use being Christian or a Catholic unless we do outreach. It's no use us sitting in our pews every week and listening to the Word of God and not doing anything about it. And so, when you have a look at your parishes, whether you have some sort of outreach program, have you discerned what's the need in your area? A lot of parishes have the St. Vincent Paul Society. I'm a volunteer with them. I go out, I give food to the poor, clothing for the people that need clothing, furniture, bedding to asylum seekers because they don't even get a bed, and that sort of thing. And I get a certain amount of satisfaction. But I just wonder, I haven't seen any of those people come to church. So I don't do it as an act of evangelization, but I do it as me acting out the message that I'm getting through the Gospels. So perhaps to think about, your own parishes and what outreach programs you have and what more you can do. That's a real emphasis. That's what the Gospel, the basic message. You don't have to read the whole Bible. The main message is try harder, do more. And I'd just like to finish, and this was written by Bishop Ken Untner, and it's in memory of Oscar Romero. It's called A Future Not Our Own. It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it is beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is another way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program accomplishes the church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. This is what we are about. We plant the seeds that one day will grow. We water the seeds already planted, knowing that they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces effects far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing this. This enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders, ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own.
That was Brenda Hubba with A Multi-Ethnic Church, Building Intercultural Mission in the Parish. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.